discussing a shaila about the people who were on duty all night, and they were involved in very extensive missions. They were involved in a military operation, and as a result of that, they spent the entire evening being very busy doing whatever it was that they had to do, all kinds of excursions. It comes time now for the morning. They're extremely exhausted. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. They want to go to sleep. And the problem is, if they go to sleep, most probably they will sleep through the Zman Kriya Shema. So the question is, does a person have a right to do that, or perhaps not? So let's just introduce the question as follows. You look in the first paragraph, B'mabat klali, in the overall perspective, Ha'imu telas ala adam chova. This is a general question that's not only limited to the shayla we have here, but this is a general perspective that one needs to have. Do I, as an individual, have an obligation? Sheyucha l'kayim ha'mitzvah lefnei shehigia zman chiyuva. Do I have to worry in order to make sure, before the mitzvah sets in, do I have to worry already now to make sure that I will perform the mitzvah properly? O shema ein l'mitzvah ela makoma v'shaita. Or perhaps, maybe, the mitzvah is only at the time that I'm obligated to do it. But before the mitzvah actually sets in, I have no obligation to worry about it. If the time comes and I'm available, and I'm able to do my part, so fine. If the time comes and I'm not, so I'm an anus and I'm putter. That's the basic question here, which, again, is much more expansive than the general than the specific question that we're dealing with. So it manifests itself in our shayla by a situation where a person, 2 hours before the Zman Kriya Shema, wants to go to sleep. The question is, do they have to worry about Zman Kriya Shema now, or do they only have to worry about Zman Kriya Shema once the Zman actually sets in? So this is a very important question. There is a famous Gemara. He doesn't discuss it here, but it's a famous Gemara in Maseches Psachim Daf Gimel, where the Gemara tells us the story about Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So the Gemara there says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira once had Ahu Arama'a. There was a Roman, there was a non-Jew who tried to trick all the Chachamim, and he decided to go and bring a Karban Pesach every year to the Beis HaMikdash. And every year he was getting away with it. He obviously dressed up as a Jew, and he didn't disclose his identity, and he was telling everybody that he was allowed to bring a Karban Pesach. And he once went to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and he was sort of showing off to him how he successfully tricked all of the Chachamim and the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash every year and made them offer his Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira did not know what to do, and the Gemara says he made this whole plan, and he figured out how, even though he was not going to be there the following Pesach in Yerushalayim to stop him, he figured out how to make a plan that there was a code word and the Jews in Yerushalayim would figure it out on their own. Tosis asked the obvious question, why was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira not there himself? What do you mean? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira had to come up with a whole plan to figure out, how am I going to trip up this Arama that when he comes to Yerushalayim next year to be Ola Regel before Pesach, the Kohanim are going to understand that he doesn't really belong there and they're going to throw him out. What do you mean? You should have been there. If everybody has Yerah Kozachurcha, everybody has an obligation to be Ola Regel, why was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira not there? So Tosis says maybe he was a Zakein. Maybe he was a chole, maybe there was something wrong, and therefore he wasn't able to make it. So the Tzlach there has a lengthy discussion in the Noda Behuda, in his comments on that Gemara, and the Noda Behuda writes, no, the answer is he was Bederech Rechoka. The answer is he lived far away from Yerushalayim. And therefore, somebody who's Bederech Rechoka is not obligated to come to Yerushalayim to be Ola Regel. And the Minchas Chinuch challenges this view, and he says, how is that possible? How could it be that a person who lives far away from Yerushalayim has no obligation to come and be Ola Regel? The Gemara's definition of Derech Rechoka is how far? Tes Vav Milin. How far is that in our metric system? I don't know exactly. But it's not so far. So if you have somebody who lives in the Golan, for sure that's out of Tes Vav Milin. For sure. Way out. So if you have somebody who lives in the Golan, you're going to tell me that person can stay home for Pesach, has no obligation to come to the Beis HaMikdash to offer a Karban Pesach, has the Minchas Chinuch, that's outrageous. And if you look, Rabbi Yaakov Emden has, I forgot to photocopy it, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a discussion about this as well. In Cain, Tama al Atzmacha Tema Gedola. One has to wonder, Ech Efshar Lomar Cain, if anyone wants to look it up, it's in Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Chav Zayin in the Shelas Yavitz, that's the Tshuva Svarim of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So he asks, how is it possible to say, Mishama Kazos, are you going to tell me the only ones who have an obligation in offering a Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach are the Jews who actually live in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, so close to the Beis HaMikdash? And the Torah says, everybody has to bring Karban Pesach. And if you don't bring it, you're Chayiv Kares. Who is that referring to? is that referring to? Only to the Jews who live in the closest vicinity to the Beis HaMikdash itself, but anyone who's outside of that immediate vicinity is Pater? How can that be, asked the Yaivitz? It's impossible. V'chein HaRambam Umoni HaMitzvahs, when the Rambam says, somebody who's mevatel the mitzvah of Karban Pesach is Chayiv Misa, is Chayiv Kares. So what does the Rambam mean? Only the person who happens to live next door to the Beis HaMikdash, who doesn't bother to bring a Karban Pesach, he's the one who's Chayiv Kares, but everybody else is Pater? How can that be? And he says that he finds it very hard to believe such a thing. Ein richuk haderech potro. It's impossible to say that just because you're far away from Yerushalayim, therefore you get an exemption from the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. Shatzarech ulasos kol ma de'efshar. You have to do whatever you can in order to get to Yerushalayim in time. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Emnon says. Ela shim nenas machmas richuk haderech. If a person tried as best as they can, and now it turns out, because of circumstances of the long trip, they're not able to make it. So, what does the Torah mean when it says that somebody who is an anus is not going to be chayiv kares for neglecting to do the mitzvah of Karban Pesach? That's referring to a situation where the person tried as best as they could, and there was a traffic jam. So what am I supposed to do? There was a traffic jam, didn't allow me to get to the Beis HaMikdash in time. I was a complete anus. I had everything set up properly. And now something happened the last minute. I wasn't able to make it. Somebody died in the family. Something happened that I wasn't able to make it to the Beis HaMikdash in time on Erev Pesach to do the mitzvah I was obligated to do. But outside of that, you're going to tell me a person could just sit with his feet up if he lives far away from the Beis HaMikdash and he has no obligation to do anything to try and obligate himself in the mitzvah? And he finds this very difficult, which is really the taina of the Minchas Chinuch against the Night of Yehuda. He says, how can that possibly be? He doesn't think it makes sense. Mikal Makom. Rabbi Yaakov Emnon still agrees, and he says that you have to at least agree somewhat. Tzarech lomar diyesh gvul adavar. There must be some sort of cutoff. There must be some sort of boundary in which we say, look, if you're this far away, you're not obligated. Why? He says, how could it be if it says Ufanisa Baboker Bahalachta Lo Alecha? If it says that a person in the morning after you've done the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, you're supposed to turn around and go home. So he says, what if I live in a community where it takes me 6 months to travel to Yerushalayim? Back in the days where they used to take boats and they used to travel on horse and buggy. So it could be that it would take a person 6-7 months. So he said, am I mechuyev to spend my entire year going back and forth to Yerushalayim and home? How can that be? It's an impossibility. So he says, it must be that there's some gvul, must be that there's some limit that we say. If you live further than this point, you have no obligation. If you live closer within this point, then you do have an obligation to go. So this is the basic discussion that he has. So he says, where are you going to make the cutoff? So he says, 30 days. If you live within 30 days of the Beis HaMikdash, travel, then you have to go. If not, that's unreasonable. And again, when you think about that, for those of us who live the lives that we do, and every minute we're busy running around and going here and going there. Imagine you have to take off 30 days before every Yom Tov to go and start traveling to Yerushalayim. What? Right, which means you're there. It's more than 60 days. It's 30 days there. Then you have Yom Tov. And then you can't go home. What?
3 times a year.
3 times a year. 1 second. So even one Yom Tov. Oh, so that's the kasha that the Yaivitz has. Shavuos, you'll never make it. Right? So that's why he says it's 30 days. Shavuos, you will make it. Oh, you're saying there's not 60 days. By the time you go home, you have to turn back around and you'll miss it. So it's a good question. How could it be Shavuos? So that's what the Yaivis writes. It can't be 6 months because then you won't make it back for Shavuos. So you're saying, how could it even be 30 days? Interesting question. What? Anyway, this is what the Yaivis discusses, but it's basically a major issue. It's a major problem to figure out how much does a person have to do before the mitzvah sets in order to make sure that I'm going to be available to perform the mitzvah as I best should perform it. So, the Netziv has a comment with regard to the laws of Shabbos. The Netziv there is talking about the Pasuk Shamar es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. So says the Netziv, we know that Zachar v'Shamar b'Dibur Echad Nemrim. We all know the Gemara says, Zachar and Shamar were said at the same time. Masha ein hapeh yecholah l'daber, ve'ein ha'ozen yecholah l'shmoa. But he says there is significance in the fact that Zachar and Shamar were said at the same time. So he says, the same way the Gemara explains what the meaning of Zachar es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho means practically for us, so too, we have to explain what it means practically, Shomer es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. What is he getting at? Says the Netziv, he has it both in his Tshuvas and in his commentary on Chumash. The Gemara says, a machlokes be Shammai and be Hillel. How is a person supposed to prepare for Shabbos? Says the Gemara, Zacharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, Beis Shammai says what you do is, all week long you have to be thinking about Shabbos. If you see something on Sunday and you think that it might be something that's relevant for Shabbos Kodesh, you need to enjoy your Shabbos, to eat it on Shabbos, you already have to be worrying about this on Sunday. That's the definition of Zacharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. That's what the Gemara says, and that's the way we paskin. So as an aside, everybody asks, what's pshat? We have a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. The halacha always is like Beis Hillel. Suddenly over here we paskin like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai is of the opinion on Sunday you have to start worrying for Shabbos already. Beis Hillel says no. On Friday when you go shopping for Shabbos you'll pick out whatever you find. So why over here all of a sudden do we paskin like Beis Shammai? It's against the regular rules. So my father says over very often in the name of, I think Rav Soloveitchik, but I don't remember exactly. So he says the reason why is because the Gemara there does not say it's a machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. It says Shammai mida acheres haisabo. Shammai, when he prepared for Shabbos, this is what he did. Hillel, when he prepared for Shabbos, this is the way he did. What the Gemara means to say is this is not a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. This is a personality. If you're the type that lives life like Shammai, always planning ahead, then when it comes to Shabbos, you also have to plan ahead. If you're a type of person that lives the life of Hillel, where you figure things out on the spur of the moment, and right now, when you have the thing in front of you, you figure it out, so then you have a right to be like Hillel. So Rav Soloveitchik said, if you're the kind of person that buys life insurance, means you're the kind of person that lives life like Shammai. You think in the head. You're thinking for the future. Well then, that's why we paskin like Beis Shammai, that when it comes to preparing for Shabbos, you have to think already from Sunday, how am I going to do the mitzvah properly? Right? That's why over here, specifically, we paskin like Shammai, and we don't follow the opinion of Hillel as we normally would in every other sugya and shas. However, says the Netziv, the same way the Gemara outlines for us the mitzvah of Zacharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that it dictates that we have an obligation to already think from Sunday about how we're going to perform the mitzvah, so too writes the Netziv, the mitzvah of Shamaris Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho begins already before Shabbos. Shamar means you have to make sure not to violate a losaseh of Shabbos. So what do you mean? Before Shabbos comes in, how can I think about Shamaris Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho? Says the Netziv, you have to already start thinking earlier in the week, how am I going to limit the amount of Chilas Shabbos this week? So if I have an opportunity to have a surgery either on a Friday or to have the surgery on a Sunday, and I'm going to have to be Mechal Shabbos because I'm going to be recovering from the surgery on Friday, Shomeres Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho dictates you should already have the surgery on Sunday to make sure that you're not going to have to be Mechal Shabbos unnecessarily. That's what the Netziv explains is the comparison between Shomeres Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho and Zacharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. The Chassam Sofer was posed with the same question. And the Chassam Sofer was asked, what is the halacha with regard to a doctor who wants to go ahead and be metame lemesim? He wants to go ahead and, let's say somebody is in cardiac arrest, and the doctor wants to go to school to learn how to help somebody who is in cardiac arrest. So maybe you'll say he has a right to do it because pikuach nefesh is docha kala tera kula. So I should have a right to be docha the mitzvah of tumas meis in order that I should be able to save a life later on. Says the Chassam Sofer, absolutely not. V'lu yahiv nalei ta'use hayini hayinu hainu I omei lufanena pikuach nefesh. He said, you're making a big mistake because if a person has a situation of pikuach nefesh in front of them, obviously we would say whoever runs to do it first is the one who gets the mitzvah. If somebody has, rachmana litzlan, a heart attack, and we need somebody to go ahead and perform CPR, we're not going to start asking questions, oh, are you a Kohen, are you a Levi, are you a Yisrael, and we're going to start choosing, no, whoever's the first one there will go. Whether it's a Kohen or a Yisrael, doesn't make a difference, whoever will save the life is fine. That is when you have a pikuach nefesh lifanenu. However, writes the Chassam Sofer, you want to go to medical school, there is no chola bifanenu. You want to go to medical school now, in order that down the line you should have the opportunity to maybe save somebody's life should the possibility come up, but you're going to be metame lemesim now in order to take care of that problem that potentially will come up later. Says the Chassam Sofer, Aval shehiya kohen mechen atzmo, that a kohen should prepare himself now, levater kedushas kuhunaso, he should prepare himself now that later on in history he's going to be mechalalus kedushas kuhuna. She'im yizdame lefanenu pikuach nefesh. Yehu amisasik v'lo acher. That if there will be a situation of pikuach nefesh, you're going to be the one there instead of somebody else. Writes the Chassam Sofer, v'chiyen anu mitzuvin lahachem be'erev Shabbos, kol ha'achanos liyoledes ulechola ulitzarche mila, kedei shalo nitztarech lechalos Shabbos. Don't we have an obligation to think about this before Shabbos and make sure that we don't violate an Avera on Shabbos if we can avoid it? So too, we should think about this in advance and say to ourselves, why would we be metame ourselves lemesim in order that later on, maybe we'll be available to help somebody? Why would you think that way? We have an obligation to think now about what's going to come in the future. Now, this is a very controversial point. The Magen Avraham in Siman Shin Lamed, I think I've discussed it here in the past, has a famous comment from the Sefer Hasidim, where he writes that when you have a yoledes, when you have a woman who's about to give birth, so you should do whatever it is that's possible to limit the amount of Chilas Shabbos, and he says you should go out of your way to have everything ready before, in order that Chilas Shabbos won't be necessary when the time comes, if she's going to give birth on Shabbos. Now, sometimes it's not practical, but says the Magen Avraham, one should try as best as they can. So when we were expecting our first child, my father told us, you're supposed to have the baby in Lij, you're going to have to take a taxi on Shabbos. So he told us the whole ninth month you have an obligation to stay in the neighborhood of Lij, this way you won't be Mechal Shabbos. So I was a little bit taken aback by that, and I didn't think it was going to go over so well, so we were discussing how exactly we were going to do it. So what we decided was, in the ninth month, you have to have an appointment by the doctor every Friday. So I asked my father, if we have an appointment by the doctor once a week. So if we schedule the appointments Friday afternoon, and 6 hours before Shabbos, the doctor says there's no movement, there's nothing going on, the likelihood of your first child being born so quickly is pretty low, so is that good enough of a reason for us to be able to stay home? He said, yeah, that's good enough. So the 4 weeks of the ninth month, my wife had her appointments every Friday, and the doctor told us everything was fine. So now we're overdue. So my father said, well, once you're overdue, I don't know that you can rely on that anymore, because the baby has to come out at some point. So those two Shabbosos we spent in Lij, I'm sorry, we spent the Shabbosos in New Hyde Park, which is the neighborhood right outside of Lij. Now, who are we going to stay by in New Hyde Park? I don't know anybody. We stayed by the one doctor who's a Talmud of Rav Shechter, who Rav Shechter told him he has to live near the hospital because he's not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to go on his rounds. So we stayed by this guy who lived there. He was a wonderful person, Tzvi Wilver. We stayed by his house because he was living there because he had tremendous Yerushamayim to live there. And he didn't want to travel on Shabbos because my father told him he's not allowed to take a residency where you're going to have to travel on Shabbos. So he lived there next to the hospital. We spent Shabbos by him. The second Shabbos, we went in right before Shabbos into the hospital. We were admitted. Baby was born Friday night. I said this was our schar. Because we were so careful about Chilul Shabbos, we had a baby Friday night with about 1 ounce of Chilul Shabbos. Everything was Kedasu Kedin. Until after the baby's born, we're all done, everything's great. After the baby's born, the nurse comes over to my wife and says, okay, you need to do a fingerprint. I said, don't do the fingerprint. Fingerprint, the Rugachever has a tshuva where he discusses, the Rambam says there's an issur of kosev on Shabbos. Kosev means if you write shtei osios, that's considered ksiva. However, the Rugachever writes that if you look carefully in the Rambam says there's another melacha that's an offshoot of kosev, which is roshem. If you make something which is not only aleph, beis, gimel, but if you make something that is looks like a picture, if you make something that other people can understand what it is that you drew, even if it's not letters, but if it's something that others can interpret into being something special, so that's also an offshoot of the melacha of kosev. So the Rugachever writes that in his community, I guess in Rugachev, I don't know where that was, so in his community, the policemen used to stop people randomly on the streets during the day, and they would ask them to do a fingerprint. He calls it a finger druk. So he says they used to ask people to stick their fingers into ink, and then they would have them put the ink onto the paper, and he said that he believes that that would be a violation of the malacha of roshem that the Rambam describes here, because you're making a picture that other people can understand. It has meaning. When the policeman looks at your fingerprint later on the station, he's going to understand what it is. So the Rugachever says, so I'm sitting there, I said, we made it this far. We weren't Mechal Shabbos, we were so careful to have all the appointments on Friday, and here we are, and the baby's born, and everything's healthy, everything's fine. Now we're going to be Mechal Shabbos to do the fingerprinting? Come on. Come on. So I said, don't do it. I said, just make pretend you don't understand, and make the nurse, make the woman do it for you. So that's what she did. She ignored the nurse took her finger, and the nurse went and put it onto the paper. Okay, I come back to yeshiva on Sunday, and I was so proud of myself that, oh, we weren't Mechal Shabbos, everything was great, we listened to my father's psak, we stayed there for Shabbos. And I'm telling this all to my father, and there was some other friends of mine who were there, everyone was discussing the issue, it became a big tumult there in yeshiva, so a friend of mine, Eitan Schnell, says, oh, Shai, you missed, there's a machlokes the Shach and the Taz with regard to this Shaila. I said, what are you talking about, machlokes the Shach and the Taz, you're telling me I didn't do it right? Well, in Hilchas Nida, the Mechaber talks about a case when you have a woman who has to go to the mikvah on Friday night, and she forgot to cut her nails before Shabbos. So there's a discussion, are you allowed to have a nachri go ahead and do the malacha for you on Friday night to cut the nails in order to enable me to do my mitzvah of going to the mikvah? So that's the big shaila that they have. So the machlokis is, what do you mean I'm not doing it? Amir la nachri, but makam mitzvah is generally permissible. This is certainly a makam mitzvah. She wants to go to the mikveh. She wants to go and be with her husband. So there's a mitzvah there. Should be that amir la nachri would be permissible. What's the problem? However, the Shach writes, when it's a maisa begufo, when they're doing a malacha on you, how can you say that amir la nachri would allow such a thing? Amir la nachri is when they're doing some external activity that is going to benefit you, so then you say amir la nachri might be permissible under certain conditions. But when you have the maisa being done begufo, when the person is coming, cutting my fingernails, I'm the one who's actively engaging in the act, even if I'm not doing anything, but it's on my body, how can you say that amir la nachri would be permissible for such a thing, even though it's a makam mitzvah? So he says to me, it's very nice that you tried to be machmer, that your wife shouldn't do it, but you still violated the problem because it's a malacha begufo. So anyway, this was the discussion. What?
It's not a malacha begufo. It's on a piece of paper.
No, but the doctor takes your finger and does the malacha with you.
Calculate the finger, making it dirty.
No, but they don't take... No. The problem is not putting the finger in the ink. The problem is when they take the finger that has ink on it and they put it on the paper. They don't take the paper and put it on your finger.
That's not begufo. That's on the goof is making something else.
Not sure. Not sure. Anyway, it was an interesting point. At the time when this was going on, my father was very insistent on his opinion. So much so, the Magen Avraham writes that not only do you have to go out of your way not to be Mechala Shabbos when it's in the ninth month, but the Magen Avraham also says that Hasidim HaRishonim Anshei Maisa used to daven that the baby shouldn't be born on Shabbos. Like, they used to be mispala, and he says they used to have Tashmish HaMita 9 months earlier. I don't know how you work this out exactly, but he says they used to have Tashmish HaMita on certain nights of the week to make sure that the baby won't be born on Shabbos. I don't know how that works out. The baby's born whenever it's born, but whatever, that's what the Magen Avraham quotes from the Chassidim Anshei Maisa. So recently there was a new Talmud of my father who was very excited that Rav Shechter said you have to do this thing. So it's not my father's Chiddush, it's the Magen Avraham. So so this guy called me up and he said that he's not only trying his best to be in the vicinity of the hospital, but he's also going out of his way to daven that the baby shouldn't be born on Shabbos. He wants to know, should he daven? What was that? What was the question again? I think it was Shavuos time. I'm forgetting already. So he wanted to know, should he also daven that the bris, that it shouldn't be a boy? Should he daven that the bris shouldn't be on Yontif? Because then he's going to have to be Mechala Yontif. Yeah, I think, when was Shavuos this year? Sunday, Monday, right? So he wanted to know, when the Magen Avraham says you should daven that you shouldn't have the baby on Shabbos because it's going to involve Chilul Shabbos, he wanted to know, should I also daven that it shouldn't be born Sunday and Monday because then the bris is going to end up being on Yom Tov and we're going to have to be Mechalel, Zehutra, Dechuya. I think it's getting a little too complicated. I said, just be there for your wife and make sure everything's fine. And we'll all daven that it should all be okay. And it all worked out nicely. What? Yeah, Shalom Bayis is important. So you know, you have to have a wife who can handle such a thing. Baruch Hashem, I have one. After our first child, you know, it's not so simple. We go to someone else's house in the ninth month with another child, not so simple. So we didn't try it at home after that. But anyway, while that was all going on, I got a call every Friday in the ninth month from Rav Asher Weiss. He was so upset about this psak, he ended up writing a letter about it. It's printed in the Chelek Aleph. If anyone has it, it's printed. Baruch Hashem, my name is not in there. But he was very upset about the fact that my father said that we should be careful about such a thing. He said, what are you talking about? The Magen Avraham says, this is Chassidim Anshei Maisa. This is not something everybody has to do. He said, he was very, very upset about it. So every Friday he called, he said, where are you for Shabbos? I said, we're home this week. He said, okay, good. Then after the 4 weeks were over and we went away for Shabbos, he said, so where are you for Shabbos? I said, we're in the hospital. What are you guys, crazy? Staying by the hospital? Never heard of such a thing. Who was machmer for this Magen Avraham? Anyway, so that's what was going on. That's the background to the story. The basic point of where I started with all this was that we have to think before Shabbos begins whether or not we're going to be faced with a situation of Chilul Shabbos. And that's what, again, the Netziv writes, we learn that from Shamar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. That is the same as the din of Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that we have an obligation to prepare in advance for the experience of Shabbos, both to make sure we have wine for Shabbos and challah for Shabbos and everything else, and also to make sure that we don't have to be mechala Shabbos once Shabbos comes in. So this is a very important question. Is that something that is limited only to Shabbos? Well, as we said, by Karban Pesach, we have the same discussion. By Karban Pesach, they discuss whether or not I have to already be thinking 30 days before how I'm going to get to the Beis HaMikdash in order to perform my mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel and Shechitas Karban Pesach. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tav Reish Pei Hei, which is the mitzvah of, anybody know? Purim, Kriyas Parsha Zachar. So there we have a mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. Problem is, I live in a little community. I run the Chabad house out in Indonesia. I don't even have a Sefer Torah yet. I just moved with my wife, so what am I going to do? Now it comes Parsha Zachar this year, so what am I supposed to do? The closest place that I can go to hear Parsha Zachar is, I don't know what's close to that, but 100 miles away. So am I mechuyev to go and spend Shabbos somewhere else in order to perform the mitzvah, says the Shulchan Aruch. You have to go somewhere else for Shabbos in order to be able to hear the mitzvah Parsha Zachar. I am not obligated in Parsha Zachar until Parsha Zachar. So why do I have to worry about it on Friday? So what do you see from the Shulchan Aruch? You see, one does have to do something in order to make sure that they are prepared for Shabbos. So this is a very important issue. And that's basically what he raises here in the very first paragraph. That was just an elucidation of this first line of the tshuva. That's the problem. When you read a tshuva sefer, the issue is, you know, if a tshuva is going to be 20 pages long, like Rabbi Avadi Yosef's tshuvas. Anyone ever read the Abia Omer? Every tshuva is 15, 20 pages long. You have to be like a real Talmud Chacham to have the patience to go through the whole thing from beginning to end. Somebody once told me one of the great things about my father, you know, many of us who learn by my father take him for granted and we don't understand what the greatness of him is because we get used to it. And he's a very humble man, so he doesn't explain how amazing it is what he taught the entire generation of students that he had. So one of the great things about him that somebody once pointed out to me that I never even thought about, you know, many Talmidim of my father will quote a Rabbi Kiva Eger here, a Rajba over there, they'll quote all kinds of different things. What you don't realize is that was a 20-page Rabbi Kiva Eger. Rav Schechter is the only one who actually spent the time going through the 20 pages and found the one relevant piece of information that you're now quoting, like, oh, everybody knows Rabbi Kiva Eger. No, nobody ever knew that. The only one who knows it is somebody who actually read through the whole thing and now made you aware of what you should know from there. Where I remember very distinctly, there's a Rashba in Yevamos that my father talks about often. The Rashba is pages and pages long. Nobody makes it through. And there, right in the middle of the Rashba, he makes a comment that's relevant to a big halacha sugya, but you have to have the patience to read through the whole thing. So my father actually read through the whole thing, and he extracted from the long piece in the Rashba what is necessary for the Talmidim to know in another sugya. But we lose sight of the fact that he actually had the patience. So the problem is in a tshuva sefer, as beautiful as they are, you can't just go on forever and ever. You have to consolidate a little bit, otherwise people aren't going to have the patience to read what you write. The problem with consolidating is you don't always get all the juice that's behind what you're trying to prove. So here, this is the basic question. Do I have an obligation to think before the mitzvah begins about how I'm going to do it? Or would you say, Ein the mitzvah ela mikoma v'shaita? That's a very famous line. Ein le mitzvah ela mekoma v'shaita is not a line that he made up. That is a line that comes from the Rishonim in Maseches Shabbos. What are the Rishonim talking? I'm sorry, Maseches Erevin. The Gemara there talks about in Daf Samach Zayin and Beis. The Gemara there discusses Hahu Yenuka de Ishtapech Chamime. What is that story referring to? So you have a child who needs to have a bris on Shabbos. As we know, we perform the bris on Shabbos because the pasuk says by Yom Hashmini Yimal b'sar alaso. I was so amazed this week. I had my son's siddur play. This has nothing to do with the siddur play, but I bumped into somebody there. He tells me he lives in a community in the Five Towns. And he said that the shul that he davens in once invited me to give a shiur in their shul. I have nothing to do with the people in the shul, but they once invited me to come, so I gave a shiur there on a Thursday night or something, a couple of years ago. So he tells me the following. He said that it was Parshas Tazria, and they wanted me to talk about the Parsha. So what am I going to talk about? Tazria is Parsha Brismila, Tazria Mitzora. So I spoke about the mitzvah of Bris Milah, and along the way, I gave a whole hour shiur. It was probably a little longer than an hour. I gave a whole shiur about Bris Milah. One of the things that I mentioned was there's a major discussion when the Torah says by Yom Hashmini Yimal Basar Laso. It says Isha Ki Tazriya V'Yal DeZachar, a woman who will conceive and then will give birth to a male. Then by Yom Hashmini Yimal Basar Laso. If you have all those, then you have the Bris on Shabbos if the baby is born on Shabbos. However, if something along the way is missing. Says the Gemara, for example, what if the baby was not born naturally? It was a Yotzei Dofen, it was a cesarean section. So then, in a case like that, we say, when it's a C-section, so the baby's not allowed to have the bris on Shabbos because it wasn't Isha Kitazriya V'Yalda Zachar, you don't have all the conditions. So there's a famous question that's relevant today. What if you have a different part of the process that wasn't the way the Torah describes it? Isha Kitazriya means when you have a woman who is naturally conceiving a child, and then she gives birth, and the birth happens to be on Shabbos, then you go ahead and you have the bris on Shabbos. What if instead of the birth not being natural, you have the conception is not natural, like today where we have the blessing of having IVF? So that's a big shaila that Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about. nowadays, and Rabbi Avad Yosef discusses it, and Rabbi Yashiv is very excited about this issue. Should we assume that today, because we have an opportunity for a woman to become pregnant in an unnatural way through the other medical interventions, should we assume that that also would make an implication with regard to the bris being Docha Shabbos? The same way an unnatural birth, a C-section, would stop you from having a bris on Shabbos, maybe an unnatural conception would also prevent you from doing the bris on Shabbos. So I mentioned this in middle of the shir, and the whole place is looking at me like they never heard of such a thing. It's an unusual thing to talk about. So I just mentioned it in passing, then we moved on. But there was one person in particular that was like really looking at me. He comes over to me after the shir and he says, you know, I'm just curious, what's the psak about this case? You know, I sometimes like to leave cliffhangers. I don't like to tell everybody what the psak is. I don't like to tell people what to do. You know, you want to know more about it, so you look into it. So I raise the issue. The guy comes over to me after. He says, what's the psak? What's the halacha? I said, you know, it's a big shaila. So he said, what does Rav Schechter say? I said, well, my father has told me in the past that he thinks that one should not do a bris mila on Shabbos if the child either was, like the Gemara says, either was born unnaturally or if the conception was not natural either, if it was an IVF. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman discusses, this is going to be very complicated, if let's say I'm a mohel, so when somebody calls me up to make a bris on Shabbos, I have to start asking a million questions. First of all, I have to ask them, are you Jewish? That's a question every mohel has to ask. Are the parents Jewish? You say, of course we're Jewish. What do you mean? I grew up in this family, that family. Then you have to ask, I'm sorry, it's very uncomfortable, but I'd like to know, was this a natural conception? Or was this something that you had some medical intervention to help you conceive? That's a very embarrassing question, and very often they don't tell anybody about how the method of conception actually happened. So this is a technical issue, how are we going to deal with that? But anyway, my father has said in the past that he feels that the proper thing to do is not to do the bris on Shabbos. So I said to him, look, that's what my father feels, but I'm sure there are many others who disagree. And that was that. Okay, that week I got an email from Avi Leibowitz, who's Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz's brother in Los Angeles. He was very unhappy with what I had said, and he said, this is not the opinion of the masses, this is not something that we should be following. I said, okay, look, I didn't give the guy a psak. He asked me, what would you do? I said, I follow my father, this is what my father told me to do. This is what I would suggest if somebody asked my personal opinion also. But I said, look, we're open to suggestions, I'm happy to hear more about it. So he sent me a bunch of interesting articles about it. That was that. The guy came over to me, this was like 3-4 years ago, that I gave the shir, I never heard anything. The guy came over to me by my son's sitter play this week, and he says, he pulls me aside, he says, I just want you to know, I was the guy who was white in the face when you were giving that shir, and I was the one who came over to you afterward. I said, okay. So he says, I never told you the story. My wife and I had problems conceiving. Our first child was born on Shabbos. The bris was on Shabbos, and he was an IVF conception. And Rabbi Kivega raises an issue. What if a person does, right, the Gemara has a discussion in Maseches Temura, Kal Milsa di Amar Rachmana Lo Sabe di Yavad Lamahani. If the Torah tells you not to do something, maybe if you did it, it doesn't work. So the guy says he was so nervous. What's the halacha when I have a situation where my son was an IVF conception, and he actually had the bris on Shabbos, that according to your father he shouldn't have had, do we have to go now? He's 6 years old. Do we have to go now and do a new bris mila? How can you do a new bris? It means how tough is down bris? The guy was so nervous, he didn't know what to do. So he told me at the time, he went to ask a shayla, what's the halacha? And they told him, you don't have to be machmer that far. You don't have to go do a bris again. The problem was, his second son that his wife was pregnant with also was an IVF conception. And he said, at the time that you gave the shear, my wife was almost ready to give birth. And I heard this and I was so nervous. So he said, but I was praying that it would be one of the other days of the week and I won't have to worry about it. Turns out, the baby was born on Shabbos, second time. And now he was educated. Now he knew that there was at least an issue. He didn't know what to do. So he went to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz to ask him, because he didn't want to ask me because I had already interacted with him. So he wanted to ask somebody else if he had nothing to do with. So he went to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz and he said, I know you're friendly with Shai. And he said this, well, what would you say? So Aryeh said, look, I don't know what to tell you. You know, this is a major shaila, I don't want to get involved. He told him to call Rav David Cohn. David Cohn, a big pesach and flappish. So he called Rav David Cohn. Rav David Cohn said, the right thing to do is to push off the bris to Sunday. That's what he told him, halacha l'maisa. He told him to push off the bris to Sunday. So he said, you don't have to tell everybody why. You can tell them the baby was yellow, the baby was this, that. You can give some kind of excuse. The mo wasn't comfortable, he wasn't big enough, whatever. You tell everybody that the bris is going to be Sunday for whatever reason. Nobody has to know the real reason. But Rav David Cohn said he thinks, la halacha, we should be machmer for such a thing. Why am I mentioning this? Oh, I came to it because this guy who recently wanted to be machmer for the Magen Avraham to go to the hospital before Shabbos and make sure he's not going to be mechallel Shabbos. And this year Shavuos, he had a big problem. Shavuos turned out to be Sunday, Monday. His wife was in her ninth month. So he was going to do whatever he could not to be mechallel Shabbos. So he said, do I have to be mispalel that I shouldn't have the baby on Sunday or Monday either in order that I won't come to be mechallel Yom Tov? I think that's getting a little bit extreme. I don't think one has an obligation to go that far. But it was an interesting perspective regardless. So the Gemara says in Maseches Erevin, Daf Samach Zayin, what happens when you have a child who has a bris milah on Shabbos? And rightfully so, he's supposed to have his bris milah on Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us there that in their days, they used to believe that the only way for a child to recover in a healthy way from the bris milah is if you have warm water that you pour on the child after the milah. That's what they used to do. So says the Gemara, Hahu Yinuka, the ishtapech chamime. You have a child where the water spilled, and we don't know what to do. So the Gemara says, of course, that's pikuach nefesh. You have to go ahead immediately and get a nachri to come and heat up the water. There's no doubt about it. You have to do it. So the Ramban and the Balamar have a disagreement. What do you do if you forgot, not that it spilled, you did everything you could do, and then it spilled on Shabbos? That's one case, the Gemara says. But says the Ramban, what happens in a case where a person did not prepare it? And now it comes Shabbos, and now I do the bris milah. Do I have a right to go ahead and do the bris milah now, and then, oh, after I do the bris milah, it's going to be pikuach nefesh, so then I can do the malach of heating up the water? Or do you say, no, if you know from the outset that you're not going to have the water because here I am Shabbos morning and there's nothing here, would you say that a person has to worry about the fallout later or not? That's the discussion that the Balamar and the Ramban have there. And one of the Rishonim says, Ein lecha ela mekoma v'shaita. Right now, I have a mitzvah bris milah in front of me. Don't worry about the fallout that's going to happen later. You have an obligation to perform the mitzvah that's right in front of you right now. If by doing the mitzvah, it's going to cause me later on to do a malacha because I'm going to have to heat up the water. Okay, that's pikuach nefesh. You have a heter. That's not your problem. Right now, you only have to look at the perspective of the mitzvah that's in front of you. And the other Rishonim say, no, you have to look at the total picture. You have to look at the whole story. You can't just look at a limited perspective and say, well, right now I have a bris milah to do. And I'm going to have to go heat up the water, so that's too bad. That was the very important shiloh. Once we're talking about my wife being in the hospital, I remember that first time that we had a baby, we were in the hospital over Shabbos, and I was so careful the whole Shabbos not to be mechallel Shabbos at all. So I went out to daven shachris in shul, and when I came back, there I was waiting in the hallway for a nurse to push the electronic button to get into the maternity ward. So I'm waiting, and there was a frum guy who was standing there in the hallway, and he's eating a Shabbos meal. So he turns to me and he says, why are you waiting out here? He sees me waiting 5-10 minutes. He says, why are you waiting? I said, well, I'm just waiting for someone to push the button. I'm not, you know, it's Shabbos. So he says, what do you mean it's Shabbos? Of course it's Shabbos, but it's Bikoach Nefesh. Your wife is in the hospital. She just had a baby. You have to go inside right away immediately. You cannot delay. I said to him, look, I don't think this is pikuach nefesh. You know, I'm going to go in another 5 minutes. My wife is being well taken care of. There's a good hospital. They have doctors and nurses here. I'm not concerned that there's something wrong. So he says, oh, don't give me these yeshivish, svaras. He was learning in Shar Yashiv at the time. He says, don't give me these, chumras and everything. Just shinui it. I said, look, a shinui is very nice, but a shinui is still asamid rabbanan. You're not allowed to do a shinui just for any malacha. It's only if it's warranted. I said, I don't think it's shinui. So he says, stop with your chumras. I'll shinui it for you. So he goes over and he pushes the button for me. I said, he didn't help me. Yisrael that does a malacha for you on Shabbos, you're not really allowed to get hanah from him. So, whatever. It happened to be a nachri walkthrough anyway, 2 minutes later. So I just went. But I came back after Shabbos and I went to Rabbi Yeager and I said, the guy's a wonderful guy. It happens to be our kids are now in the same class because we were, what? It's a very interesting class. It's a very interesting class. What? He's a wonderful guy. He just doesn't know the halacha. It's okay. So I see him all the time. He always wishes us happy birthday because he remembers. I guess I scarred him. So I remember I went to Rabbi Yeager right after Shabbos and I told him, I think somebody should give a class to the young families in the neighborhood about what is allowed on Shabbos, what is not. There was another guy who was there for Shabbos with us who showed up Friday night. Obviously, if you have to go on Friday night, you go Friday night. He came Friday night. But he came with like all the family members. So, we were schmoozing in the hallway at some point in the middle of the night. I said to him, how did everyone get here? He said, well, on our way to the hospital, we went and we drove to my mother-in-law, and then we went to the sister-in-law, we went to this one. I said, it's Shabbos, what's going on here? He says, what do you mean? It's Pikuach Nefesh, it's Mutter. So one has to be very careful about the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Pikuach Nefesh, and one has to be very thoughtful about it. But the point is, certainly when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, the Rishonim discuss that one has to be very thoughtful, very mindful about the laws of Shabbos and about making sure as much as possible not to violate the laws of Shabbos, even when it's a Pikuach Nefesh situation. But if it was easily avoidable, you have to do whatever you can to avoid that circumstance, to avoid that situation. What we're going to discuss here, which I see we didn't get to tonight for some strange reason, what we're going to have to discuss here in the coming weeks is, how does this play out with regard to other mitzvahs? How much do I have to think in advance of the mitzvah to make sure that I do whatever I can to perform that mitzvah? Again, in Shulchan Aruch it says, by Parshas Zachar, you have to go out of your way. If you know you don't have a Sefer Torah, you have to go to another community in order to make sure you have a Sefer Torah to read Parshas Zachar. But when it comes to many other mitzvahs, how far out of my way do I have to go? So I know that Zman Kriya Shema is in another 2 hours. I happen to be up in the middle of the night, I can't sleep. Now all of a sudden I'm ready to fall asleep at 5 o'clock in the morning. Do I have a right to go to sleep, or do you say, no, I have to plan in advance. If I go to sleep now, I know that's going to mean that I'm going to be Mevatel the mitzvah of Kriya Shema later on. So this is a issue that again extends way beyond the laws of Shabbos and way beyond the laws of this very particular story that we're discussing. It's something that I think is a very rich inyan that has very far-reaching consequences with regard to many different mitzvahs throughout the experience of the year.